Well, good morning, and a special welcome to Carol Queen and her daughter, by the way. Good to see you here. I don't remember if you've ever been here when I've been here, actually. So I'm the new guy. Well, we're going to continue on, essentially, on the same theme as the last 2 weeks. How can we possibly talk about our Great Commission for more than a week? Well, we could go on for a year, but we're not going to. But there's so much to say about what God has called us to. You know, 2 weeks ago, we focused on what the Great Commission means for us as a church and for our target group in the community where God has put us. Last week, we started looking at ourselves through the eyes of that target group. What do they see when they look at us? We also reviewed some of the changes we've already made with them in mind and looked at some opportunities for further changes. Well, this week we're just briefly going to review a couple of key points and then pick up where we left off. You recall this. This is our Jerusalem. We are called as a church to make disciples among the 6,300 people in and surrounding Roseau. That is the ministry we are called to. Yes, there are other things. There are international missions, and there are things we do within our own membership, but this is our primary focus. 2,600 of those 6,300 people are between the ages of 25 and 58. We don't have many of those in our congregation at the moment. And of those 2,600, 1,500 of them are not regularly attending anywhere else. They're somewhere other than where we are this morning, right? And they're not in any other church either. In order to become effective in reaching that people group, they need to be the primary focus of our ongoing planning, prayers, and other ministry efforts. Let me say that again. Those 1,500 people in our target group need to be the primary focus of our ongoing planning, prayers, and other ministry efforts. If we want them to be here, we need to be prepared. We need to reach people before we can disciple them. Most churches, very honestly, have drifted so far from their primary mission that 90% or more of their focus has turned inward rather than outward. They focused almost exclusively on themselves rather than the lost world around them. We need to resist that trend. We need to be different. We need to be and do what God has called us to. Remember this, we talked about this last week. In Philippians 2, 3, and 4, Paul tells us that in humility, we need to value others above ourselves, not looking to our own interests, but each of us to the interests of the others. We need to be outwardly focused on other people, not on ourselves. We need to shift our focus toward the needs of the community around us. That's the big we, right? That's our bullseye, the big we. We also need to focus on the needs of others within our church. That's the small we, right? That's the second ring of our, or the next ring of our target. Because remember, when, you know, we talk about how the church is about we, not me. But also add this, when, and you're going to wonder if I've lost everything Clara ever taught me about proper grammar. But hear this, when me wins, we loses. When me wins, we loses. Boy, that sounds awful, doesn't it? But it's true. We need to remember that the church is about we, not me. And we looked at this, the Pietist motto, something that's at the foundation of our church. We need to be very conscious and intentional about discerning which things that we do and believe and we're about are truly essentials that must not change. What are those things? And we need to defend them with no compromise. We need to say this is non-negotiable. But we also need to discern things that are non-essentials, about which we can agree to disagree. Things that have biblical support, but we may have different perspectives. There are many of those, many things that where we can agree to disagree and both be in a solidly supported biblical position. And then lastly, the third outside ring comes down to our personal opinions, our preferences that we can choose to set aside for the sake of others. We need to be most flexible when it comes to our preferences, because that's all they are. They're just preferences. We looked at a list of changes we've already made, and there have been many. A lot of these things are a helpful foundation as we continue to shift our focus toward preparing for that target group that I believe we're called to reach. Now realize, I understand that change is hard. It's not something I always enjoy either. A lot of change can be overwhelming. I totally get it. I agree. But I personally prefer to make changes very few at a time and over a longer period of time. That's what I prefer to do. More similar to what we've done over the last 8 months. We've been chipping away at a few things that we could change that were relatively easy. Some took a fair bit of effort and even some expense. But there was not a whole lot of reason to have disagreement about doing those things. Now, we've been chipping away, but I've got to say, I'm not sure that's going to continue to be as effective. Given the reality of our current situation, I believe we no longer have that luxury of taking our time at a pace we can tolerate and enjoy and feel relatively comfortable with. The clock attached to our financial situation is relentlessly ticking, and we all know that. It's ticking toward a turning point. And I believe that the decisions we make in the coming months will determine what that turning point will look like. Ready or not, here it comes. And the decisions we make will shape what that turning point is. If we trust the Lord and each other enough to make the changes necessary to be and do what the Lord is calling us to, then I believe that path will lead to reaching our community, discipling them and ourselves along the way, and growing to a point of healthy sustainability and flourishing as a church. Now again, I looked at the numbers, and our pews can easily, comfortably be filled by 100 people. Wouldn't it be nice to have another 75 or 80 people here this morning? That would be so wonderful. But if we're too afraid, too unwilling, or too convinced that we're unable to make those necessary changes, then I believe, unfortunately, that path could very easily lead to closing our doors. You know, yes, it's true that the sale of the parsonage will buy us some time, but without also making needed changes to become effective in our mission to reach and disciple our Jerusalem, the sale of the church itself could eventually follow. And none of us wants to see that. We would become just one more of the 15,000 churches a year that close in the United States. 15,000 churches a year close in the United States. We don't want to be one of them. You know, selling the parsonage was a hard decision and a big change. Let's not allow it to go to waste by resisting other changes that still need to be made. Now, this past Wednesday was 1 year since one of my personal turning points. That's when I walked out the door at Marvin for the last time. Lord willing, this coming November 1st will be another turning point anniversary for me as I reach 1 year as your pastor, with hopes of many more to come. Here's one of my earliest turning points from June of 1973, when I graduated from kindergarten. Some of you probably might recognize my Sunday school teacher. Oh, not Sunday school, I'm sorry, kindergarten teacher.
My goodness.
You're welcome. Aren't those some snazzy pink pants? I have the feeling they don't fit. Yes, yes. Well, that was certainly a turning point, right? And of course, a lot of times turning points are associated with change. The transition from kindergarten to first grade was probably not entirely easy, right? That was my first year of formal education, right? There was no preschool back in those days. And by the way, I don't have enough copies of that for everybody, so you'll have to ask Clara if you can look at hers. We can always trust God and the people he places in our lives to help us to be and do what he calls us to. Whether it's our kindergarten teacher, or, and by the way, I have no doubt Clara has prayed for me many times over the years. Same as Luvik Mattson, my third or maybe fourth grade teacher, I forget, fourth was it? Okay, Jonathan remembers. God puts people in our lives to encourage us and to help us be ready for what's coming. You know, sometimes even if we're convinced that another path would have been easier or better, sometimes God chooses to give us a bit of a roundabout way of getting where he wants us. It was 38 years ago when I was a college freshman, I was convinced that I wanted to go to seminary and become a pastor. And if I had followed that path at that time, I would have stepped into that role 8 years later in 1993. 30 years ago, I would have become a full-time pastor. But God had other plans. You know, that would have been much quicker and more efficient in my mind, but the Lord instead led me down a very different path. It included 2 years as a full-time youth director, 2 years as a part-time youth director, 4 years as a volunteer youth director, 2 years as a deacon, 7.5 years as an elder, and 5.5 years as a part-time pastor. In 2006, the Lord made it clear to me that he still wanted me to be a pastor here in Roseau and that I needed to get ready. I needed to prepare for the change. I started seminary in 2010 instead of 1989, a little bit later, right? I finished in 2015 and then waited another 7 years, still working in volunteer and part-time positions, until last November when I finally stepped into my first full-time role as a pastor here in this church. It seems clear to me that God knew that experience, both in life and in ministry, was even more important than any seminary degree, even though that seemed like it might have been a more efficient path to do it my way. He knew better. God is a lot more interested in effectiveness than he is in efficiency. He has all resources available to him. What looks maybe a little bit wasteful or like wasted time or effort to us is sometimes the perfect path to get us where he wants us to go. Well, it's my hope and prayer that as we continue to move forward together as a church, that we can trust the Lord and each other enough to walk the path that he lays out for us. I'm sure that, you know, 50 years ago or more, no one would have thought that the church would be sitting in the situation we're in today. It's not what we would have chosen, but it's the path we're on. And we need to make the right decisions to continue moving forward, to join the Lord in the work he's doing, because he is, and get in step with what he has planned. Now, some more thoughts on our target group and how we can meet their needs, desires, and preferences. Some reality checks about what's going on in the United States these days. These are the percentages of the U.S. population that are affiliated with each of the religious groups listed here as of 2014. About 65% of the U.S. population is represented, which means 35% of Americans about 10 years ago, 9 years ago, 35% of Americans claimed no religious affiliation of any kind. 65% did, but there's a lot of options on the list. As you can see, self-identified Lutherans make up less than 4% of the U.S. population. But 26% of the Minnesota population. We live in the state that's kind of the center of Lutheranism in the U.S. I don't know that it's more common anywhere other than Minnesota. Lutheran churches here in Minnesota are more plentiful than any other religious group or Christian denomination, so anyone interested in attending a Lutheran church typically has many, many options to choose from. And that's certainly true in our community. These are the 29 churches within 20 miles of where we sit this morning. 29 churches. Now, I have to say that I've always been so glad to live in Roseau, where we have a strong Christian community. I have lived in some communities that are bigger than Roseau and had only two churches. It was a totally different feel. And there's a lot of collaboration between the churches in Roseau. That's why one of the reasons we can have church night tonight, right? So that's a wonderful thing. But there's some drawbacks to this particular situation. And by the way, notice that this, I said I was pretty strict on the 20 miles. This does not include Greenbush or Warroad. This only goes as far as Badger. You know, this is literally about 20 miles from here. If we added them, it would get even longer. Notice also that we are just one of 18 Lutheran churches within that 20-mile drive from us, 20-mile radius roughly. And that includes those that are liberal, moderate, or conservative, anybody who has Lutheran in their name. And we're also among the 14 of those 18 that are currently not really able to sustainably support a full-time pastor long-term. You know, we're really kind of on the edge of not being able to do that. So what can we offer our target group of 1,500 25 to 58-year-olds who don't regularly attend elsewhere? You know, what are we called to be and do that will meet their needs, desires, and preferences in ways that will attract them here rather than somewhere else? You know, they have a lot of options. Why not choose somewhere else instead of here? Well, here are some possibilities. Our target group has a lot of needs. One of them is common to a lot of people, meaningful relationships. Think about what life is like for the typical 25 to 58-year-old in Roseau. If they didn't grow up here in particular, why are they here? Probably they moved here for work. They didn't look at a map of the United States and say, where would be my ideal place to move to? and then pick Roseau. Probably didn't go that way, right? No, if you move for the sake of a job, what's one of the things you need to do when you get there? You need to totally start over in establishing relationships. And if you're a believer, you're going to be looking for a church. If you're not, that's not even on your radar. So especially those who've recently moved, they're looking for relationships. There's also a need for childcare. In today's economy, the luxury of a stay-at-home mom is out of reach for most families. But a severe shortage of daycare providers makes that very difficult in our area, forcing some people to work opposite shifts. I'm sure most of you have probably known someone who has had to do that, at Marvin or at Polaris or wherever, where mom works one shift, dad works another, and there's a handoff between shifts of the kids. That's a tough situation. Certainly not ideal. Attending a church that provides childcare during worship services and other church events, along with children's ministry opportunities like Sunday school or VBS, etc., that's pretty attractive. That could really be a blessing to a family that doesn't have a lot of options. And then there's a long list of needs related to learning, coaching, mentoring, opportunities, and support. When you don't have family, especially when you don't have family and friends nearby, this is a fantastic way to develop that support network. You know, we live in a complicated world, and for those lacking family and friends especially, navigating it's even harder. Learning opportunities will frequently provide a back door into the church. Most often we think of inviting someone to Sunday morning worship services. A lot of people get connected to a church by being invited instead to a class or a group or something else that maybe doesn't even meet in the church. It meets in someone's home, and they develop relationships, and then one day they show up on Sunday morning and they start developing a more formal connection to the church. Many learning needs are the same as our own. You know, we all have a lot to learn. But others are due to the challenges faced primarily by some of the folks in our target group, maybe those who've moved here recently. I told you a case study, a fictional case study a few weeks ago about a family from Puerto Rico moving here to work at Polaris. That actually happens. There are people in Roseau today who probably have experiences very similar to that. And learning English as a second language has become one of the most powerful means of evangelism around the world. Because English is more and more becoming the universal language on the planet. And the chance to teach someone English is a chance to teach someone about a lot of other things. A friend of mine who used to be a missionary in Turkey is now involved with ministry to international students here in the U.S. He also drives a school bus for some of their children and often helps new arrivals to navigate the immigration system. And it helps that he speaks Arabic. So Bjorn, you might want to brush up on the Arabic a little, or Spanish in our case, maybe. Spanish would be good. But what other needs in our target group could we meet? You know, there's the options are just about limitless. I have no doubt that if we begin to think and pray about that question, the Lord will show us all the opportunities we could possibly hope for. Then we can begin to prepare accordingly. What is it we can prepare to do for someone in that group of people that we would like to bring to our church? If we invite them to a worship service, but they find little here that addresses their needs, they'll likely not come back and the opportunity is lost. But if we prepare in advance and develop our ability to meet their needs, it gives us something specific to offer them as part of our outreach efforts. We need to reach them before we can disciple them. And we need to prepare to effectively minister to them before we can effectively reach them. Preparation is key. We have to get ready. Reaching, discipling, growing. That's our mission and its result. Now back to a few potential obstacles. We talked about a couple last week. There's some issues potentially that we can run into with how even something as little as how we do our offering or how complex our service order can be. Not as complex as some, but certainly more complex than a lot of people are used to. But thankfully, you know, there are some simple solutions to those things. Those are not hard changes to make. As long as we're willing, those are easy changes to make. As long as we're willing to let go of the way we've always done it and try something new and find ways that work. But today, I'd like to touch on another potential obstacle. I think it's safe to call this the most high and holy sacred cow in many churches. I should have a drum roll, but I don't have a drum with me. Da-da-da! Music style, right? Churches are infamous, I think we can say, for having big issues with music style. But let's just look at the realities. I want to share some numbers with you. What is it that people actually prefer when we ask people out there who are in churches, what do they say? Here's some information. You know, music style is one of the most common hot button issues. So, and remember, it's a preference. This isn't anywhere near the center of our target. Anywhere from 65 to 90% of our regular attenders on any given Sunday are 59 or older. They represent the generations known as the builders and the boomers, right? And on average, 30% of them actually prefer contemporary music and 70% prefer traditional music. Now, this isn't necessarily reflecting your personal preferences. This is asking a whole bunch of people. And another way to think of it is that a mix of 30% contemporary and 70% traditional would probably be a fair compromise that would allow everyone to sing and hear some of what they prefer. Now, if we go down a couple of other generations, this is our target audience. This is the 25 to 58-year-olds. They are our target group, and on average, their preferences are 60% contemporary and 40% traditional. The youngest generation that's in this data set is down all the way to 7 years old. Their preferences are very similar to the 25 to 42-year-olds. Now, does any of this surprise you? Does any of this really seem like it's way out there somewhere? In the world that you live in, do you not have a sense that this is true? Did you notice that there's no generation who completely rejects traditional music? Not even close. Even 7 to 24-year-olds like traditional music. I can't quite read the numbers on my printout here, but it's a pretty significant, about a third of the time. That shouldn't be that big a surprise, but I think people tend to be particularly surprised that some of the older generations actually also prefer contemporary music. So would you find yourself anywhere in this data? No one, as a group, rejects any style of music completely. Nobody says, I don't want any traditional music, and nobody says, I don't want any contemporary music. That just isn't in the numbers. Now, do you see yourself in those results? Are your personal preferences similar to those of your generation? Or are your preferences more aligned with those who are older or younger than you? You know, it doesn't really matter, no matter where you fall. It's okay. Remember, these are just preferences. These are not the center of the bullseye. These are not essentials. These are not the next ring of the bullseye. These are not non-essentials that we can just agree to disagree. These are preferences. These are that outside ring. So no matter where you land in your preferences, it's okay. Because the church is about we, not me. Maturing believers are expected to think first about others rather than themselves, especially when it comes to the needs, desires, and preferences of the unbelievers and the drifting believers out there that we're called to reach. So with that in mind, I'd like to make a suggestion. Our current music style is pretty close to this. We're pretty thoroughly traditional, with the exception occasionally of a contemporary special music song, that type of thing. What would a mix that better represents the 100 regular attenders that we'd like to have here every Sunday morning, the majority of which would be between 25 and 58 years old? What would a mix look like that represents we, not me? Probably more like this. If you actually take all of the results of that survey and you add them together and average them, it literally comes out to almost exactly a 50-50 split. Half traditional, half contemporary. You know, God gives churches the means to do what he calls them to do, but he often doesn't do so until they're ready to trust him and prove it by taking steps in that direction. Now, thanks to Jonathan, we are better equipped to provide the traditional side of the mix than most any church I know. To the best of my knowledge, anywhere near here, we are one of only two pipe organ churches. I think the only other one's at Riverside. Three. Yeah, and they're not very far away. But there's only three out of 29 churches, right? So we have that side taken care of. We're well handled on the traditional side of the mix. But how can we move toward providing the more contemporary side of the mix? Well, we're going to come back to that in just a minute. Last week, even though I don't think I even mentioned music, after the service I was asked this question, will we need to have one of those wild praise bands? And I guess that depends on what that looks like to you. For example, if it makes you think of this, or notice the smoke machines and the lights, or this, or even maybe this, I think I can confidently say no. There's no reason we need to have a wild praise band. But what I have in mind, especially to start with, is a lot more like this. This is Nathan Drake. In 2015, he began to develop a ministry that eventually became what is today called Reawaken Hymns. Its focus is on creating arrangements of classic hymns with a bit more contemporary feel. He makes many related resources available to churches for free. I have over 50 of them on my computer right now. So why don't we give one a try right now? Could you pull that MP4 file up, Bjorn, and get that playing for me? So this is someone who took the initiative, particularly during COVID, when churches were going online, and he intentionally chose classic hymns that have no legal requirements for licensing or anything like that. And he produced resources for churches for free so that they could do their worship services online. And his ministry is growing substantially. He even produces oftentimes multiple versions of each hymn so that people can choose what level of style they want. But God always provides the means to do what he calls us to do. Often it may require us to do things in ways we've never done them before. But he always makes a way, and he helps us walk in it if we're willing to follow. So as we focus on him, some very familiar words come to mind. Including our preferences and in the way we've always done it, you know, we need to grow, let them grow strangely dim. When our focus is on him, other things grow strangely dim. Things that seemed like a big deal are not a big deal when we turn our face toward Jesus, when our focus is on him. We need that kind of willingness to move ahead so that we can grow. In order to grow, we need to get very good at reaching and discipling. So let's decide in advance that we're ready to do whatever it takes to follow as the Lord leads. Next week, we'll continue looking at ourselves through the eyes of those we're called to reach, through the eyes of our Jerusalem. Please pray with me. Father God, we thank you for your willingness to involve us in the work you've called us to. Lord, you could do it all entirely on your own, but you've chosen to make us plan A, and there is no plan B. You've chosen to work through us to reach the world around us. I just ask that you'd help us to get past the obstacles and even over the little speed bumps and move ahead to be and do all that you've called us to. Help us through the things that are uncomfortable. Help us through the things that are challenging. But above all, Lord, help us to keep our eyes on you and let you deal with those little things. We ask it all in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, let's sing together number 567, Jesus, Lover of My Soul.